Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the fourth quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Friday, March 8, 2019. I would now like to turn the conference over to Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you and good morning. We appreciate you taking the time to join us on our fourth quarter and year-end 2018 results conference call. IBI released our year-end results yesterday afternoon, and the complete financial statements and management's discussion and analysis for the period ended December 31st, 2018 are filed on SEDAR and have been posted on IBI's website at ibigroup.com. Joining me on the call this morning is our Chief Financial Officer, Stephen Taylor. Prior to commencing our formal remarks, I would ask Stephen to read the following disclaimer about forward-looking statements. Stephen?
Thank you, Scott. On behalf of IBI Group, I am required to note that some of our statements made on today's call might contain forward-looking information. We caution listeners not to place undue reliance on our forward-looking statements, since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities law. For further information on risk factors, please view the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities and available on the company's website, the SEDAR website, or by contacting the company. I'd also like to point out that all amounts discussed today are in Canadian dollars unless otherwise stated. I'll turn the call back to Scott now. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. Through 2018, IBI demonstrated the strength of our business model and commitment to our new technology-focused strategic plan, which we announced at last year's AGM. Our Q4 and year-end 2018 results demonstrate key financial metrics that met or exceeded our expectations, including a year-end adjusted EBITDA margin of 9.9%. Our transformational pivot to a technology-driven design firm will continue to improve IBI's margins and provide a platform for growth. Looking ahead to 2019, we are currently forecasting approximately $374 million in total revenue, with the relative geographic contributions remaining consistent with 2018. We currently have approximately $385 million of work that is committed and under contract for the next 5 years. This translates to approximately 12 months of backlog. As a direct result of our pivot to a technology-driven design firm, momentum continued to build in our intelligence practice through 2018. To illustrate, we saw a 13% increase in our net revenue year over year with an operating profit margin of 16.3%. In 2018, the intelligence practice represented 17.9, or approximately 18% of our overall revenue, a meaningful improvement over 2017, where it was 16.1%. IBI has set an internal goal for intelligence practice of generating 20% of our total revenue with a 20% margin by 2020. Our infrastructure practice realized a profit margin of 10% during the year, despite the recent pause in infrastructure contracts being awarded by governments, especially in Canada. The infrastructure deficit continues, and we do expect governments to initiate various projects starting in the latter part of 2019. As mentioned previously, the buildings practice saw a decline in net revenue for the year due to the U.S. operations. We have taken action to stabilize and refocus our U.S. operations with a transition to new leadership and closer collaboration with our Canadian operations. We are also following our various buildings clients out of Canada as they look for opportunities in major U.S. cities. As a result, IBI generated over $2 million in adjusted EBITDA for this segment, demonstrating the impact of our efforts. We expect the U.S. performance will continue to improve through 2019. Here in Canada, there is continuing demand for architectural services in a variety of areas, but especially mixed-use high-rise residential in all major markets, including Vancouver, Toronto, Calgary, and Montreal. And we are winning ever greater commissions, including AM City Development in Mississauga. The development includes six towers, with one tower over 80 stories. This is the tallest tower that IBI Group has designed and is set to become the tallest tower in Mississauga and the third tallest in the GTA. In international markets, we continue to realize robust activity in the Middle East, India, and Israel. In India, we are involved in a variety of transportation planning and intelligence projects. In the Middle East, we are undertaking a number of master planning projects throughout the UAE, and work continues on the Red Line LRT project in Tel Aviv. In the UK, even with the uncertainty around Brexit, we don't see any immediate downsides to the ongoing results. However, we are concerned about the Brexit outcome in that it could have a negative effect on private sector investment. Strategically, the launch of three new technology products in 2018 will create new opportunities throughout 2019. The first of these products is our Smart City platform, which combines monitoring and control, big data, and predictive analytics to support improved decision-making for cities, as well as smart communities and smart buildings. The platform can be tailored from an entire city to a single building or a campus of buildings. The second product, informed by IBI Group, is a system to help clients manage their capital assets, assets that we design. It will help them to manage the assets by reducing cost of operations and maintenance. Finally, BlueIQ is a real-time management system that enables cities and utility operators to optimize and reduce the energy costs of water distribution. It is currently saving the City of Toronto more than $1 million a year. In addition to our organic product launches, IBI has also purchased GreenAL Mobile, which affords IBI new opportunities to rethink the way we deliver mobile technology across all of our sectors and software solutions. Looking forward, we see significant potential for IBI to play a key role in providing services and solutions in ever-growing urban areas. Canada is expecting to welcome nearly 1 million new immigrants between 2019 and 2021. This represents a need for approximately 330,000 housing units, mostly in major centers. This also creates a need for schools, healthcare, transportation, other infrastructure, all areas of a business for IBI. The scale of growth requires planning, and IBI is leading some 55 major urban planning projects across the country, representing some 5,000 acres of redevelopment. Once the plans are approved, they provide a stream of work for our buildings and infrastructure sectors, but also now provide a platform for our smart solutions for smart buildings, smart infrastructure, and smart mobility. In 2019, we are planning launches of new products, including a traveler information service to complement the current coverage we have in North America. In addition to repurposing many of our existing systems, we are also fully engaged in the tech eco environments in Toronto, Vancouver, and India, so we can work with startups and other tech partners to create and deliver new ideas and solutions to market quickly and efficiently. Another key consideration in our tech pivot is the engagement of our staff. Recently, we held a hackathon with almost 300 staff involved over a two-day period. The purpose, to identify new products and solutions to improve the efficiency by which we operate, but also delivering new services and products to our clients. We remain excited about the market opportunity in the coming years. Our recently reinvigorated core business, centered around the urban environment and the application of technology, provides us with a platform for future growth and performance. I will now turn the call over to Stephen for an overview of the financials.
Thank you, Scott. Net revenue for the fourth quarter 2018 was $92.4 million, up 6.3% compared to the fourth quarter of 2017, and an increase of 1.9% to $368.3 million for the year ended 2018. These increases were supported by the continued strength in the Canadian and international operating segments, offset by lower than expected performance in the U.S., including the restructuring of operations and identifying and implementing cost efficiencies in that geography. Adjusted EBITDA for the fourth quarter was $8.2 million, or 8.8% of revenue, and for the full year of 2018 was $36.5 million or 9.9% of revenue. The adjusted EBITDA in 2018 reflected non-recurring increases of $2.4 million in the onerous lease payments, which did not impact adjusted EBITDA in the same period in 2017, but negatively impacted 2018 due to the outflow of cash. Looking ahead to 2019, the company anticipates cash outflows related to this lease to be more normalized to the kind of $1 million per year level that we were experiencing prior to 2018. Fourth quarter net income was $3.7 million or 10 cents per fully diluted share as compared to a loss of $2.9 million or 8 cents per fully diluted share in the same quarter in 2017. Net earnings of full-year net earnings were $20.5 million or 54 cents per diluted share, increased 80% from $11.4 million or 30 cents per diluted share in 2017. The increases over comparable periods in 2017 are primarily due to increased net income, offset slightly by an increase in the weighted average number of common shares compared to the same period in 2017, which reflects the exercise of deferred share units and stock options. Net income for both periods is inclusive of a pre-tax gain in fair value of our other financial liabilities associated with changing market conditions, including IBI's share price, Canadian risk-free rate, and IBI's credit risk, as well as a loss in foreign exchange due to fluctuations in the market value of the Canadian dollar. Amendments to our credit facilities with lenders were secured during the latter half of the year to extend the maturity date by 1 year. It increased the maximum available amount on our swing line to $20 million and improved interest rate margins. We utilized this new financial capacity to go into the market and redeem the balance of the 7% convertible debentures in September for $14.8 million in cash. Our debt position at the end of 2018 was $116.7 million, consisting of $41.2 million in convertible debentures and $75.5 million drawn on our credit facilities. We remain focused on reducing overall debt through advancing cost reduction initiatives. In 2018, our ability to pay down debt was somewhat limited due to the timing of several large infrastructure project payments that required significant working capital investments, and as such, our net debt repayment totaled $4.3 million. However, we anticipate this working capital situation to return to more normal levels through 2019 as these projects start generating cash flow and we continue to focus on debt reduction. Fourth quarter 2018 interest expense was $2.1 million compared to $2.6 million in the fourth quarter of 2017, with the reduction due to the redemption of the 7% convertible debentures. Also, interest expense for the year ended December 31, 2018, was $10.9 million compared to $10.3 million for the full year of 2017. In 2018, interest expense did increase due to the acceleration of accretion expense of $1.5 million because of the redemption of the 7% debentures, offset by decreases related to the reduction in average amount outstanding on the credit facility and the convertible debentures. Days sales outstanding were 73 days as at December 31, 2018, compared to 69 days at the end of 2017. This reflects the investment that we've made in these large infrastructure projects. We continue to undertake comprehensive reviews of our contract assets and accounts receivable on a regular basis with a priority of improving these numbers. Looking ahead to 2019, our capital expenditure budget is forecast to be $8 million for the year, which will include some amounts that will be capitalized related to the development of software platforms. I'll now turn things back over to Scott.
Thank you, Stephen. Operator, we are now ready to take questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from the line of Michael Topholm from TD Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
No, Michael.
Question about the U.S. business. You showed nice improvement in profitability within that business. It's been improving for a few quarters now. In the fourth quarter, we saw EBITDA margins in the U.S. Business back up to 7.7%, and you've talked about margins normalizing by the end of Q4 19. Just wondering, what does a normalized EBITDA margin for that business look like, and is it a sort of a straight line improvement from where you ended 18 to where you expect to be at the end of 19?
Well, we do provide guidance on margin that's between 8 and 12%. We see the 7% as in the low end, or outside the low end. Given that most of our work at the moment is public sector, one would expect margins that are more in the mid-range of that 8 to 12% range. But we are looking to engage more on the private sector side where we do see higher margins. So I would target that by the end of the year we will see something that will be in the 10% range for the building sector.
Sorry, that's for the entire U.S. or just for buildings?
That would be the entire U.S.
Right. Okay. Okay. And I guess sort of a related or similar question as it relates to the Canadian business. Certainly not a business where you've had any issues like you've had in the U.S., but we did see margins in the Canadian business, EBITDA margins in the fourth quarter of this year. They were lower than they were last year, down in the sort of the 7% level compared to 11% last year. Was there anything unusual that caused that, and is it expected that those margins would come back up more into the mid-end of your or midpoint of your guidance range for the overall margin?
I would certainly expect that through 2019 they will be in the mid-range of what we have provided guidance on.
Okay, and what would have caused the contraction we saw year over year down about 400 basis points?
On comparable quarters, Mike, I think we had some people transitioning off of some of the larger transit projects that, those were contributing very significantly in Q4 of 2017. The larger phases of those projects came to an end in Q3 of towards the end of Q3 2018. Those people are transitioning onto other work. So certainly we see that the Canadian margins will rebound back up as people affect that transition. And so I don't think it's a cause for concern.
Okay. I mean, maybe you can just segue into a bigger picture question about Canadian infrastructure. There were some comments in the release about slowdown in awards due to changes in government. What does that mean for your ability to drive revenue growth in the Canadian infrastructure part of your business in 2019?
As I had said, I don't anticipate that we will see any significant additional new infrastructure projects until the latter part of 2019. We're certainly involved in a number of them, including the Surrey LRT, where we're teamed, and also here in Ontario. But with the change of government, there has been a review, or joint governments in those jurisdictions, there's been a review of process, and here in Ontario, as one example, is slowed to the point where the technical submission is now due this summer, and the financial submission would be due later in the summer or early fall. And I wouldn't anticipate that we'll see a decision until late in the year. So I don't anticipate that those projects, the big traditional P3 projects, will have any material impact on our infrastructure work until at least the end of the year, if not into 2020.
Okay, no, that's fair. So where does that leave you then, just if we think about full year 19? I realize you're not expecting those awards to come through and to help you much, if at all, this year, but does that imply sort of flat revenue and infrastructure, or were there actually some projects that wrapped up and, you know, or are wrapping up, and therefore you're actually going to be down year over year until, you know, you do get some of those new awards coming through?
There'll be marginal growth in revenue, I expect. There is other work that we are getting in infrastructure, such as the environmental assessment on a major BRT project heading to the east end of the Greater Toronto Area. And there is continuing work in some of the major projects that we have as we go through construction administration. I just don't see any significant big new P3 projects. That being said, Metrolinx in the Toronto area is still a very major client of ours, and we are still doing very significant work with them, and we anticipate that there'll be further work. It's just that it wouldn't be of the major announced P3 initiative. So I would see a stable revenue stream in infrastructure for the year.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And then, Stephen, you mentioned that you do expect a reversal of some of the non-cash working capital investment you saw in 2018, expect a reversal in 2019. Can you try to quantify that for us?
Well, I think in the material that we presented, we talked about we had in excess of $20 million tied up in working capital in those larger projects. I would see that would start to head in the opposite direction as we're into Q2 and Q3 of this year. So we will start to realize on some of that investment around that time, I think.
So it sounds like it's certainly positive for the year, but it's coming mainly in the back half of the year.
I think in the middle as opposed to the back half. And I think that's when you're going to start to see some more acceleration of pay down of debt, more consistent with what we've done in prior periods.
Okay. Can you talk about the impact of IFRS 16 on your results in expected results in 2019?
Yeah, I can, Mike. I think the way that people need to look at it is that we will end up, that the majority of the adjustment that is going to come to our financial statements is related to leases of office space. It will end up in assets and liabilities on the balance sheet of between $80 and $100 million. Probably, I would think if you pick the middle, a number in the middle of that range is where we'll likely land. And the impact on the P&L is essentially the $21 million or thereabouts of rent expense that we have is likely to end up as it will be split between depreciation, increased depreciation, and interest. With that split will likely be $2 to $2.5 million additional interest expense, and the balance of the 21, so $18.5 million, is likely to be the impact on the amortization. Those are numbers that are moving around as things happen in terms of renewals of office leases and that sort of thing. So their general guidance as opposed to more definitive numbers, which will be included in the Q1 statements.
Okay. That's very helpful, all that information. Thank you. I'll turn it over.
Our next question comes from the line of Maxim Sytchev with National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Max.
Hi, Max.
So just to clarify, the 20% intelligence EBITDA margin that you're targeting by 2020, this is excluding all the IFRS impacts, right?
That's correct.
And do you mind maybe sharing where you guys are right now in terms of the margin profile in that business so we can get a sense of potential improvements?
Sorry, what are we doing currently in as a gross margin in intelligence?
Yeah, well, EBITDA margin if it's possible, roughly.
Yeah, I think we said 16.3% at the moment, so...
Oh, that was, okay, that's the actual margin. And it's 17.9% of the overall revenue, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And so in terms of, you know, getting the extra 400 basis points, what exactly are you going to be doing between now and then to drive that margin improvement?
The change will come in the mix of what we're offering. More as more of these software products come online, things that we have introduced and will continue to introduce, those will be generating the ongoing revenue stream and a higher margin. And the amount of work that we're doing in the intelligence sector that is more of a consulting nature will have a less significant impact.
So I guess it's also fair to say that the blended consolidated margin should also move up by, let's call it 150 basis points between now and then. Is that an assessment? All things being equal.
Well, it won't move up that much. Really, the biggest gain is going to be in the solutions area, where we either offer by way of a software as a service model a revenue off of a fixed platform to a multitude of clients, and/or we continuing expansion of systems deployments, where the margin then on the ongoing support and maintenance typically is well above 20%. And we continue to win new project deployments that then sets up that continuing high-margin revenue as a follow-on.
Right. And then maybe another way to think about this, in terms of the working capital commitments for intelligence, I assume it must be pretty neutral, right? So technically, as that piece of the business becomes, on a percentage basis, a bigger part of the overall, that should be helping the working capital as well. Is that how you're thinking about this?
Yeah, I think that is correct, Max. I think that the majority of our heavy investment in working capital at the moment is coming in projects in the infrastructure sector. Our turns, day sales outstanding in buildings and intelligence are better than the overall 73 days. So I don't anticipate as that business grows that we will have significant investment in working capital.
Right. And sorry, and the last thing, kind of building on Michael's question on working capital, so we should be assuming positive working capital contribution for 2019. Is that how you guys are modeling right now?
Absolutely.
Okay. And the very last question I have, do you mind maybe commenting on the U.S. Margin progression to the 10% level from current, I guess you said 7.7. In terms of what exactly you're doing, is it just more work coming onto relatively fixed SG&A, or do you have to win new contracts to be able to scale the margin profile? What exactly gives you the confidence to be able to improve that margin?
It's a combination. First, realizing better efficiency with the existing work that we have in hand. But it also is growth in our private sector work. We are seeing that many of our buildings clients out of Vancouver and Toronto are looking south to the major urban centers, and we're following them down. And on that kind of work, especially when we can get leverage off of our Canadian base, we are getting much better margins on that design service. So typically the private sector work that we do when we're doing it in volume, we're getting at the high end of the guidance range that we provide. So that mix and improved efficiencies we see as taking us back to the mid-range.
Okay. No, that's helpful. And maybe just, one last one that I've been asking for a while, but the high-rise market in Canada, you're not seeing any slowdown, obviously, given your commentary, right?
Not seeing any slowdown. We are seeing a change in the mix, though, away from the condominium market. Not that it's diminishing in any significant way, but there is a greater interest in rental, mixed-use high-rise rental, where the developers, especially the major pension funds, are looking for long-term return on the on their investment. And so we're seeing much more of that. And that also then changes the relationship with the client because it sets up more of an opportunity for us on our technology side to be able to work with them to have long-term arrangements and asset management and operational efficiencies where we don't see the same degree of that in the condo market.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Frédéric Bastien with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Frédéric.
Guys, I was wondering whether your revenue guidance was based on adding professionals throughout the year, or getting better utilization out of them, or a bit of both?
A bit of both. We certainly see revenue, better utilization being a key thing, not only better utilization, but also just applying more internal product efficiencies so we can reduce the amount of what we call the labor-intensive effort and allowing staff to be more engaged in the creative side and the value creation prospects. And that has involved for us a lot of development and deployment of robotic software and bots and such to just take away the drudgery of the kinds of things that our senior professionals are doing. And we've had a steady program of activity in that area, and we see that that will continue through 2019.
And if we just look at the geographies, looking at maybe Canada, U.S., the U.K., and the rest of the world, I mean, do you see adding professionals versus maybe cutting some professionals? I suspect that you're happy what you've done in the U.S., but just wanted to get a feel for what might be happening in the U.K.
UK, we're watching very carefully. Certainly the market mix is changing, so we are adjusting staff skills and the number of staff to better suit the market as it evolves. So we are seeing there are certainly cuts being made in certain areas, but we're also adding in other areas where the markets are strong. And that's a general comment across the board, just tailoring our capacities to the needs of the market. I don't anticipate that we'll see a major increase in staff from an organic basis, but focus more on efficiencies.
Okay, thanks. And turning to more strategic growth, do you feel a need to add more Green Owl type businesses to your intelligence practice right now, or are you satisfied with the initiatives that you have going on internally?
We are looking to engage with other companies, either by way of partnership, by acquisitions, or joint ventures. We don't have the bandwidth and capacity to do all the kinds of things or all of the things that we see as being important as we do this pivot, and that's why we're involved in the various tech eco environments in Toronto and Vancouver, et cetera. And acquiring in a very selective way is part of the plan.
Thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Tupholm with TD Securities. Please proceed.
Thanks. Just a few additional questions here. Stephen, the onerous lease impact, I think you mentioned $1 million in 2019 is a reasonable expectation. Is that going to affect adjusted EBITDA the way it did in 2018, or is it going to be more like 2017 where there was actually no impact?
No, 2017 was a bit of an odd year because we did book in the fourth quarter a $3 million provision to P&L. That was reduced by the amount of actual cash outflow against that provision. I think you would look more towards we will have cash outflows in the vicinity somewhere between $800,000 and $1 million for 2019, and that will be a reduction of our adjusted EBITDA. I think we will have worked our way through the unfavorable elements of that lease by the time we get out of the back half of 2019. It runs through to 2024, and I think we have solutions in place to minimize the impact on adjusted EBITDA after we get out of the transitional period that still exists this year. So we're moving new tenants in.
Okay. And then this is not a major thing, but when I look at the Q4 18 and the impact of the onerous lease, in the MD&A text, there's mention of a $600,000 negative impact, but in the adjusted EBITDA table that you present in the MD&A, there's an adjustment for $867,000. I'm just a little bit unclear on the difference and what, you know, if one wanted to make an adjustment for this to the $8.2 million and add something back, should we be focused on this $600,000 or the $867,000?
You should be focusing on the $867,000. I'll have a look at find that $600,000 number, but the number in the table is the right number.
I see. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to also clarify a couple things on the intelligence target. So you talked about, I think it was a 16.3% operating margin and 20%
yeah.
margin target for 2020. Are these EBIT margins or EBITDA margins?
EBITDA.
EBITDA, okay, perfect. And then just lastly, in terms of the you know, the non-U.S. and non-Canadian part of the business, you break out the U.K. and other international. Scott, what would be your expectation for those regions on a year-over-year basis as far as revenue? Would you expect there to be some growth in those regions, or is it sort of better to assume relatively flattish performance in those two on a year-over-year basis?
Those other international has been very strong. In India, we have grown considerably over the past 5 years, and I would expect that will continue. We're up to about 150 people in India, and the work continues, especially in areas of infrastructure, transportation in particular, and also in systems. In Mexico, we are delivering. Mexico is largely an intelligence market for us. We deliver toll systems, and we're just delivering a major traffic management system for one of the major freeways. The Middle East is a very strong market for us in planning, and I would expect that we will see continued growth in that. And we also see in that professional services market, we see very good margins. And so we're working throughout the UAE as well as in Saudi Arabia. Doing some very major master planning projects, drawing on all of our planning, design, architecture, engineering skills. And Greece will have a big growth in Greece this year, where we're delivering a major new toll system and a whole new technology of open road tolling. But it will then revert back to a more normal continuing service there after this year. So bottom line, I would say that other international, we have great expectations for it. We're very competitive. We have very strong positions in the areas that we operate in and very strong relationships with our clients.
Okay, great. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue with your presentation.
That's it for the call. I want to thank everybody for being with us this morning, and have a good weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.